This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. The Beatles, the Beach Boys, and Bob Dylan. There was a time when no serious school of music would have those names in their curriculum alongside the likes of Beethoven. Today, the Jacobs School of Music at Indiana University offers individual courses on all three. Students have Glenn Gass to thank for that. Teaching a course on the history of rock and roll at IU began as a gig to help pay for grad school. But in the last 38 years, it has spiraled into its own academic program, a springboard to careers in the industry, and countless students who can say that the Rolling Stones were a part of their higher education. Were you one of Glenn's 60,000 students? Did a piece of the history of rock and roll stick with you? Let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail. Call us at 866-476-3881. Just give your name, where you're calling from, and a quick question or comment. We will do our best to get it into the conversation today and in front of Glenn. Again, that's 866-476-3881. Joining me now is Rudy Professor and Provost Professor of Music at IU's Jacobs School of Music, Glenn Gass. Glenn, welcome to the show. Great to have you with us today.
Well, it's great to be here. Thank you very much.
So I think when most people think of a career in rock and roll, they think of someone up on a stage in an arena playing to a crowd. But you have found a way to make one happen from the front of a lecture hall. Did you always know that one way or another music would be a part of your career?
Oh, boy. Yes. But I didn't think this this type would be. All my degrees, I have a bachelor's and master's and doctorate in composition. As you said in the little intro, I basically started teaching rock history just to pay my way through grad school till I got a real job. And by the time I received my doctorate, the courses were big and making money for the school, and they decided to take a chance and give me a faculty line. And I thought I'd keep that until I did not get tenure and then got a real job. But things kept working out. So I ended up in music, but, you know, I thought I'd be composing classical music or, you know, my dream was always to be a great guitar player and song. I wanted to be Neil Young. but the only problem is I don't have any talent. I can't play well. I can't write good songs. So, you know, you know what it's like when you have your favorite music and you get to play it for your friends or a new friend you just met. You know, that's a real joy. So, you know, it's almost, I like the term virtuoso listener. I mean, I really love listening to music, and I don't really feel cheated that I'm not making it myself, because I'm never going to write Eleanor Rigby. I might as well just enjoy Eleanor Rigby.
Well, okay, so it's a big part of your life, and it started as just a way to pay for grad school. But at what point, when it just kind of kept going, did you think, okay, well, maybe this is going to be my niche? Like, at what point could you shed the "I'm just doing this for money" and say, "Oh no, now I'm doing this for real"?
Oh, well, you know, I never said I was doing it for money. I mean, yes, logistics, I needed some money, but
sure.
The first course I taught, those of you from Indiana University know Collins Living Learning Center. It has a residential learning program, and you can suggest courses, and the students vote and pick the ones they want to offer. And that's the first course I taught, actually, here was a Beatles course. It was after John Lennon died. And I just thought, I'll tell you what the school of music was like back then. I went to a composition workshop with my fellow graduate students, you know, all my age, with a black armband on after John died. And I walked into the room, and, you know, some of them knew what was up, and they were hip. But some of them just said, "What's the armband?" And I said, "Well, it's John Lennon." And they laughed. They thought I was making a joke, like a mere pop star would be something to mourn. And I was furious. I just wanted to hit him, you know. And I thought, what can I do? And I thought, well, you know, this history is going to start fading, and maybe I should do something about that. And so I started the Beatle class really as a way to pay tribute to John. I mean, in a very personal way. And from then on, then I taught rock history and Beatles after that, and it just kind of developed. And it was always a labor of love. So I don't know at what point I decided this is a lot more fun than teaching freshman theory. I think that became obvious pretty quickly, to tell you the truth. I was happy from the start teaching what I was teaching. I just didn't think, you know, again, back then there was no such thing as rock history classes. So I just didn't think it could possibly last. That's all.
Do you remember your very first introduction to rock and roll?
Well, you know, I mean, I certainly remember the Ed Sullivan Show and seeing the Beatles, but I would be lying if I said, yeah, I remember exactly my first. But before the Beatles came along, my favorite music was, the Four Seasons, because Frankie Valli had that falsetto he could hear over any busy swimming pool or anywhere else on the radio. And also Ricky Nelson, because, you know, he was on The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet every week. And every week they'd work in a way for him to sing a song at the end of the show. And, you know, it was a great golden era of AM radio. So, I had the radio on a lot and heard the girl groups and the Phil Spector stuff and Righteous Brothers. And it was, so I was already, a music fan. But then the Beatles just, you know, of course, ripped my head off. I couldn't believe it. And after that, I was a fanatic.
We're talking to Rudy Professor and Provost Professor of Music at IU's Jacobs School of Music, Glenn Gass, also known as Dr. Rock. He has been teaching rock history courses for 40 years now and is going to be retiring very, very soon. And so there's a letter that you wrote to the Beatles in second grade that has been archived, and it's all too prophetic. You write, "Dear Beatles, I watched you on the Ed Sullivan Show. I have 5 of your records. I have 25 Beatle cards. I think you sing very good. You look so crazy with your funny haircuts. I can't wait until the fair so I can see you singing and maybe get your autograph. You didn't know how to spell the word autograph. That's okay. I will always remember you, John, Paul, George, and Ringo, from the time you came to America till I die." So prophetic. And that puts it into words pretty well. Can you describe what it was about these guys that captivated you at that time in 1964 on TV?
Well, I should say, as you read that, I'm looking at that letter, which is framed and on my wall. My second grade teacher, Mrs. Maria Rockhill, best teacher I ever had. She, to make a long story short, I had to have a birthmark removed at Methodist Hospital. And that's actually where I saw the Beatles on Ed Sullivan. I demanded that they get me to a TV. They didn't have TVs in the hospital rooms back then. And I just whined and whined until they finally got me one and I could watch them. But I went back to school then with my head shaved from the operation. And she came the next day with a Beatle wig and said, "Here, wear this. Leave it at school and put it on when you get here and put it in your desk when you leave." Now, this is at a time when teachers all over the country are saying, "Take those damn wigs off," you know, to guys wearing Beatle wigs.
Yeah.
So I thought that was wonderful. And in a little penmanship exercise, if you see the letter, you know, I write better in second grade than I do now. But, you know, I wrote this letter to the Beatles really just as an assignment. And she already knew by then, you know, this is still the same semester as Ed Sullivan, that I was a total fanatic. And so she thought, "I'd better send this to his parents." And she did. And then when I taught my first Beatle class, my mom surprised me with the letter framed. I'd forgotten, of course, all about it. So, and I don't know why, but I love the Beatles. Everything about them, you know, I remember the very moment I went to my neighbor's house, Matt Foxon, and I told him, you know, I heard the Ricky Nelson song and I got the rest of the lyrics to it. And he said, "Forget Ricky Nelson. There's a new band, the Beatles. Doug Ling has it. Let's go." So we ran across the street to Doug Ling's house. And I looked it was a picture sleeve of the Beatles, of that hair and that name, the Beatles. We forget how weird that sounded. It's like the cockroaches. It's a bug, you know? And and then he put on, I want to hold your hand. And it was so different from anything I'd ever heard. And, you know, it's one of those moments when at first everything seems wrong. And then after about 50 seconds, everything seems just right. Like, this is exactly right. And from that moment on, I was just, my friends and classmates used to make fun of me because I just didn't want to talk about anything but the Beatles. So at my first, at my 10-year high school reunion, I won the award for most appropriate job. our old class president said, he's teaching Beatles. He would never shut up about them. Now he's getting paid to talk about them. So I was a fan straight along.
Well, I mean, but you had music on as a target, I guess, on your mind, even before you started teaching the classes. And so classical music played a big part in your formative years as well. How's that?
Oh, huge. Sort of late in the game, frankly. I was in high school before, but I had a really good friend and mentor, Lee Hyla, who's a terrific composer. And I loved what he wrote, and I just loved the whole idea of writing music. Because, like I say, I knew by then I was never going to be Jimi Hendrix or, you know, sing like Elvis or whatever. But I knew that I loved music, and I wanted to find a way in. And he opened up this whole world, which I still love also, the you know, Beethoven and the Rite of Spring and, you know, just all the great classical music and all this great contemporary classical music people were writing. And so I dove into that. And like I say, that was my career path, really. All my degrees and all of my studies were in classical music and classical music composition. But I never stopped loving rock and roll. I always kind of carried it like a badge of honor that, yeah, I write classical music and I love it, but I love this too. And which really annoyed some people, but that was part of the fun.
So in studying music, you played instruments. What did you play?
Well, I would never say, I would use that word in quotes. Like I say, I mean, I had to take piano lessons. You had to have a piano proficiency to get a degree. But, you know, I would never get on stage and give a recital. And I played guitar badly enough to get on stage and play rhythm guitar behind someone that could actually play.
That was going to be another question. Were you ever a gigging musician at a time?
No. I mean, I've played in bands and been on stage playing, but never on a regular basis. One of the most fun, if you were in Bloomington during a certain period, Andy Hollanden, my good friend and colleague who used to be my grading assistant and now he's the rock teacher, teaches the other rock courses and will take over mine. He put a band together and we would do a rock history night at the end of every semester at the Bluebird and play basically songs from the listening for our classes. And those were fun. The Bluebird was packed full of happy students, thrilled to see their teachers up there, and were screaming like I was Ringo, no matter how bad I sounded.
Let's pick up where we leave off when we come back. He's sticking around with for the rest of the show. It's Glenn Gass, Rudy Professor and Provost Professor of Music at IU's Jacobs School of Music, also known as Dr. Rock. If you have questions for him, find us on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelzer. Today we're spending the hour with Glenn Gass, a professor at the IU Jacobs School of Music, who helped turn the likes of Keith Richards and Mick Jagger into figures of academic exploration, offered not just at IU, but at colleges and universities across the nation. As always, we would love your questions and comments on the topic. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave us a voicemail, including your first name and where you're calling from, to 866-476-3881. So, Glenn, before I rudely interrupted you, we were talking about you and some other faculty playing live, and you never were really a gigging musician, and you knew that you weren't going to be Jimi Hendrix. But music was your professional life, and your first professional job is indeed teaching music, but not yet in the lecture halls of a world-class music school. Can you tell us about this first job?
Oh, you mean in Wisconsin? Mm. Right out of college, I taught for a year in Baraboo, Wisconsin, a branch campus of the Wisconsin system, and also at a federal penitentiary nearby in Oxford. It's a maximum security federal penitentiary. So it was quite a contrast. I'd be teaching these farm kids in the afternoon and these, you know, convicted kind of hard guys in the evening. And it was wonderful. That is when my father was a teacher and my brother's a teacher, but I didn't know until then that I would enjoy teaching. That's when I really learned that, wow, this is teaching is really fun in general, and teaching music is a real joy. And one of the most moving moments of my teaching life actually was at the prison. There was a really tough, kind of scary guy. And he came up to me and he put his arm around me at the end of the class and he was crying. I don't even remember what song I just played, but it had obviously moved him. And he said, you know, when I'm in this classroom, I'm not in prison. because music sets you free. And I thought, wow, that should go in a book. That's just beautiful. So that made me feel not only is it fun, but wow, it might even be important.
Hmm. Was it a hard sell to get an esteemed music school like the one at IU to adopt a rock history class?
Well, see, that's where the Wisconsin year really helped, because I had a set of tapes and a syllabus, and I could go to the dean and say, look, I've done this, it worked. And because if I'd walked in cold and said, how about a rock class? I would have been laughed out of the room. But he kind of looked through it, and to his credit, he said, you know what, let's try it. We'll try it one semester. And there's he got a lot of flack from the old guard. I mean, seriously, he's gone now, so I can say this. The head of the musicology department came up to me really baffled, said, how can you spend even 1 minute on musical garbage?
Ooh.
And the funny thing is, he didn't even mean it as an insult. To him and to his generation, rock and roll was just simply not music. You know, it was these barbaric yelps over a rhythm section and nothing else. I mean, my dad hated the Rolling Stones. That was part of the fun back then, that, you know, your parents hated the music you loved, and that made it yours, totally. And, of course, you hated Lawrence Welk and whatever they were listening to, and the battle lines were drawn and the generations were drawn. And it's been so funny to watch that shift over the years. You know, I have students, and I have for quite a while, have students bringing their parents to class, and they'll come up and say, oh, I'm so glad, you know, Jimmy's in this class because I love Jimi Hendrix and now he will too. Or I love, you know, whatever, the Clash, and now he's learning about them. And it's like, wow, this music used to tear generations apart. And now people sit on the couch with their dad and listen to Neil Young, which I find hard to imagine in a million years doing with my dad. So it's a nice turnabout, I think.
So you didn't get any support from the head of the school, but who did you get support from? Obviously, well, it got off the ground.
The dean and the associate dean, and Henry Upper is my hero, they took a chance on it. Now, it may have been a mercenary thing, like maybe we can get some enrollment dollars from this. I don't know about that. But they, in any case, they went to the faculty council meetings and defended my courses and said, we're going to do them. And their word was the final word. So it didn't matter how many violin virtuosi and other people were against it. They gave it a try. So I'm very lucky. I mean, you know, to have this happen anywhere, it was amazing back then. And to have it happen at the IU School of Music, which is arguably the best in the world, was especially amazing. So it was kind of dumb luck and great timing. And, you know, when students ask, you know, what about their lives and careers, my only advice really is just don't shut any doors ahead of you, because I could never have planned this and I couldn't have studied for it. There was no college to go to learn about it. I just had to kind of invent it, and it worked.
I'm sure it's evolved over the years. Can you explain what exactly the course is like and what your goals were at the time?
Well, my goals have never changed. It's always been, in my mind, mainly a music appreciation class. And I hope the students will love the music. I mean, not everything I play will connect with them, but I hope they leave the class with some new favorites and some artists they maybe had never heard of before and now love. I mean, I love getting a letter or email from someone saying, I listen to Buddy Holly almost every day, thanks to you. I mean, that, wow. If he knows the name of the drummer for Buddy Holly, that's great, but I really don't care about that. It's just getting the music into their hearts and into their lives, because there's nothing more soothing, gratifying, especially in times like this. But so it's always been mainly a music appreciation class, and it's always about creating fans for whatever band we're talking about, or if it's a Beatle class or Dylan class, you know, especially, you know, getting them to dig into those albums. But you cannot teach the music without teaching the times. You can't play early Bob Dylan and not talk about the I Have a Dream speech and the Civil Rights March and, you know, the Cuban Missile Crisis, or listen to Neil Young and not play Ohio and talk about Kent State. So, I mean, it becomes a really good sort of history class without clobbering them over the head with it. They just tend to learn the context the songs came from. And I think that's really important too. So it really, my goal has never changed from day one. What's changed, of course, is the delivery method. I used to go to to class with an armload of cassettes and video VHS tapes and frantically try to rewind and fast forward. And oh my God, little plastic cassette deck. And so that's quite different now, as you can imagine.
Times have indeed changed. We have a listener voicemail. This one is from George with a memory of the first time he saw the professor, Glenn Gass, who's with us. Let's listen.
Hi, my name is George Heston. I was lucky enough to follow a friend visiting IU Bloomington one time, a friend who was a student at the time, and she was emphatic about me making it into one of these Dr. Rock lectures to see. And she said, "You've got to see this guy. He's so passionate. He's so intense. He's crazy about rock, and he teaches the most amazing classes." And I didn't really know what to think of it, really. But once I got in there, I remember the lecture itself was on Pet Sounds, was on the importance and the impact of the Beach Boys. And prior to that, I really never appreciated the span and the importance of Beach Boys and how they affected rock music as it is now. And that day, he did play a video of his wedding where Beach Boys were playing over the loudspeakers as he was marrying and kissing his soon-to-be wife. And in that moment, I did realize that, yeah, this guy's serious. There's something really special happening here.
When you hear something like that, Glenn, I don't know, how does that make you feel?
Oh, that's what you die for. That's what you teach for. That means so much. I mean, to connect on an emotional level is always more important to me than an intellectual level. You know, if a student leaves a class, you know, in tears, which happens with some regularity, so do I. I break down at my favorite songs, and in a way, I think that's good. You know, it shows everyone that it's okay to, you know, this is meant to be felt. And yeah, we did have Julie and I played God Only Knows from Pet Sounds at our good memory he has, by the way, at our at our wedding during the ceremony. And that's how much, you know, that song meant to me and to us. So yeah, it really makes me happy that memory's, not only the memory, but the song, obviously, and the album Pet Sounds really did sink in. That's great. That's wonderful to hear.
We are talking to Glenn Gass, also known as Dr. Rock, from the IU Jacobs School of Music. He is retiring soon, and we are spending the hour with him. And we have a few more voicemails from former students that we want to get to. But even students who never played an instrument in their life could take this class. And you were able to make the composition of the music accessible, I guess. And we've been talking about Pet Sounds and the Beach Boys. Students often cite Good Vibrations by the Beach Boys as a good example of this accessible composition. What's the approach here?
Well, I don't know how this became a tradition, because I did it on the spur of the moment and then kept doing it. And people talk about it. It's funny. I draw on the chalkboard and I just draw just squiggles and circles, and I show where the melody's high, and then all of a sudden you go, da, 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 I'm picking up, and the melody's low, and then there's this little interlude. And what I really try to show is that Brian Wilson wrote and thought as a composer. You know, we'd have like Beethoven would. They have a little middle section and a contrasting section and go from loud to soft very quickly and dramatically. And there are more of a dynamic range in Good Vibrations than even the Beatles had ever tried. It was like a little symphony compacted into 3.5 minutes. So I try to use sort of visual cues, because I know these students don't read music, and that wouldn't even matter anyway. So I just try to, it's almost like, and I wave my arms a lot. And the courses are meant for non-majors. I mean, that was part of the thing. There were no music class except for your standard music appreciation class that a non-music major could take at IU. So this opened that door. And so I'm always very aware that I'm talking to non-majors, and I never, ever get technical or talk about chords or keys or anything like that. Because I, you know, John Lennon, Paul McCartney, they never learned to read music. It didn't matter.
But at the same time, the
Good Vibrations thing has become this sort of, it's funny to me because, you know, every semester people ask, when are you going to do Good Vibrations? And all I do is scribble on the chalkboard and jump around like a lunatic. And, you know, I spent years creating these really nice, elaborate multimedia materials to use on the computer and show on the big screen. And what do they remember 10 years later? Me scribbling on the chalkboard. Might as well be 1910. So it's kind of funny. But
well, but when you're talking about somebody like Brian Wilson, who did read music and who took it very seriously and who took this sort of composition approach to things, I mean, it is kind of important, even if you are talking to non-music students, to kind of get into some of that, right?
Oh, yeah. I show, you know, there's a lot of those videos on YouTube now where Brian's in the studio talking to the session players very much the way a composer would. And he's very fluent, you know, with music. And he can talk in terms of keys and structure. And it is important. And it certainly affected his music. But, you know, Paul McCartney's no idiot. He can't read or write, you know, notes, but that they didn't need to. The Beatles would talk in terms of, you know, this is an E and we need a verse. Now we need a middle eight, you know, and they now we'll go to B minor. I mean, they were not illiterate. They just didn't need to write it on paper. Of course, the Beatles had George Martin and Brian Wilson basically was his own George Martin, you know. So that and Brian, you know, Brian, I consider our greatest living American musician, period.
Oh, wow.
Why we haven't given him an honorary doctorate, I don't know, but he's beyond that anyway.
We have another listener voicemail. This one's from Justin. Let's listen to that now.
Hey, this is Justin Oakley in Martinsville. I just want to wish Glenn Gass a great retirement, and you impacted more lives than you'll ever know, buddy, and you need to enjoy every minute of that. Let's catch up soon. Thanks for all the great memories. Bye.
Oh, what a great...
I know, Justin. Hey, Justin, thanks so much. He had me into his class one time. That's really nice. I mean, I have a hard time sort of stepping back and getting... I have a hard time understanding that I'm retiring, to tell you the truth. Yeah. I find myself thinking about fall semester and how I'm going to do things differently. And I think, no, there is no fall for you ever again. But again, when you hear things like that, and I do kind of, you know, I have taught about 60,000 students, and I think, wow, okay, there's something.
Is there talk of sort of coming back as, you know, emeritus or something like that, maybe one per semester or one per year, something like that? I don't want to put you on the spot or anything, but.
Yeah, my wife might come out and strangle me. I am not going to stop teaching. You know, there are a lot of opportunities to do, you know, one-off lectures for, you know, alumni events or do little mini courses for, they call them lifelong learning or continuing studies, you know, basically for people my age. You know, that's the funny thing. It's really fun to teach 70-year-olds or 60-year-olds now because they grew up with this. They love this music. I always think old people don't like rock and roll. And then I have to look in the mirror and go, oh, you're old, Glenn. So, yeah, it's funny. A music that is so tied to youth or feeling young, how the music grows old, how the musicians grow old. Of course, we seem to lose another giant every week now. It's been interesting to watch rock and roll grow old. And sprout wings, and you know, it could have been big band. Like the big bands died off after, you know, one generation, or the Charleston in the 20s, you know, and that could have been like the 50s and Elvis and Chuck Berry, and then just done. And then all of a sudden the Beatles came along and Dylan came along, and everything just blew open and never went back.
Got a couple of minutes left in this segment, but you've had a pretty impressive list of bona fide rock stars make guest appearances in your class as well. Who stopped by?
Oh, well, of course, John Mellencamp, he lives here.
Yeah.
You know, Bo Diddley came three times.
Really?
So, yeah, he must have enjoyed it. Neil Young.
Wow.
Who's my hero after John Lennon. The most memorable, though, was Lou Reed. I mean, I love the Velvet Underground. And He came and he spent, he walked in and he said, this is a quote, he said, this is the weirdest thing I've ever done. And I'm thinking, you're Lou Reed. I know you've done some weird things at Andy Warhol's factory and stuff. But that's how weird it seemed back then, talking, you know, in the 80s. I'm talking to college class about my music, about rock and roll, the Velvet Underground. He was scared to death. and said, I'll stay a couple minutes, I'll say hi, and I'll run out, you know. And then, of course, everyone cheered when he walked in, and he visibly loosened up, and he spent the whole hour and a half just talking and answering questions and was thrilled. You know, that all happened in the old days because the class was such a novelty. These rock people just couldn't believe there was really a class on rock and roll. Now, no one blinks when you say that. It's like, yeah, and? I got a lot of mileage out of just being so unique for a while.
What was it like in the last 30 seconds that we have? Was it difficult when Neil Young came by for you to even continue the class? Like, was it hard for you to speak in front of your students when your hero is right there with you?
Well, I met him out at Assembly Hall because they were doing a show. And I walked backstage, I got a pass, and I knocked on his door thinking there'd be a crowd of people doing God knows what. And it was just him alone looking at my course syllabus. My faithless saying, oh, what? I love that Stone song, but why'd you pick that one? Or, you know, it was just, you know, he was really interested in the class. So I didn't even have to go through the whole, oh, my God, you're Neil Young. Oh, I love your music kind of stuff, you know, because he was already asking me questions. So, you know, I kind of had him in my corner even before we walked into the room. So that was nice.
There's a lot more to talk about today. We've been talking with Rudy Professor and Provost Professor of Music at IU's Jacobs School of Music, Glenn Gass, also known as Dr. Rock. I'm Matt Pelser. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Back now to our discussion with Rudy Professor and Provost Professor of Music at IU's Jacobs School of Music, Glenn Gass. We've been talking about his unprecedented career in rock history, the power of music during turmoil and change in history, and why the moment we're living through is not much different. And as always, we would love your questions and comments. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or you can leave us a short voicemail with your first name and where you're calling from to 866-476-3881. And these guests that you brought into the classroom, they brought the history to the students, but you also led courses that brought the students to the history, and quite literally, you took groups of students all the way to Abbey Road. How'd you pull that off?
Well, you know, I really, when you introduced me and said Rudy Professor in Jacobs School of Music at Indiana University, I think, what? You know, who is he talking about? I have to pinch myself still, you know, for all my, you know, I love to tell stories about, you know, being the rebel in the old days and the old violin teachers hating rock and roll. But, you know, really, it's been the honor of my life to teach these courses at Indiana University. I never considered going anywhere else as long as this was an option, because I was at the best school in the world, as far as I'm concerned, for music. So I need to make that really clear. I love IU. And one of the things IU offers is a really good overseas studies program, and they have an extensive set of summer courses. So again, I proposed a course on the Beatles in England, and they approved it enthusiastically. And we went, gosh, I don't know, 7-8 times over to London and Liverpool. Wow. And that's a really special feeling. You know, the first time you walk across Abbey Road, the students are like going back and forth and back and forth, taking pictures in every possible combination of four, you know. And then Liverpool, you know, you can't really understand the Beatles until you go to a pub in Liverpool and understand that, wow, everyone sounds like John here, you know, and everyone has that sort of group sense of humor, sarcastic humor that the Beatles had. And you just get a sense of, wow, they really did come from a place. So, yeah, those were... And my sons, you know, the first time we offered the class, my youngest was on my back in a backpack. He was a baby, not even a year old. And the last time was in 2017, when both of my sons were in the class as IU students. So that was a nice kind of 20-year circle to complete. I enjoyed that a lot. So making it a family trip as well as a class was really special.
We actually have a listener voicemail from Grant in Fort Wayne, who was part of one of those trips to England. Let's listen.
Hey, Glenn. This is Grant Meese, proud alumnus of your last Beatles in England class, calling from Fort Wayne, Indiana. Just wanted to say, first off, congratulations on an amazing career. You mean so much to so many people, and I hope you feel as loved and appreciated as you are by all of us. and I wanted to ask you if there's a Beatles song or an album that strikes you now as one of your favorites after teaching for so many years that maybe didn't stand out to you as much when you first started. Thanks for sharing this time with us, and hope I see you soon.
What a good question from Grant.
That's a good question. Hey, Grant, it's good to hear from you. Thank you. Yes, Grant was in that last 2017 class with my sons, and that was a really special class. And good, really nice of you to call in, Grant. It's good to hear you. You know, this is going to sound so boring, but my favorite Beatles song is In My Life. And it's grown over the years from being, you know, a nice track on Rubber Soul to the, yeah, it's one of those songs, the older you get, the more resonance it has. Mm. You know, there are places I'll remember, some are gone, you know, it's an amazing song for a kid, you know, a 24-year-old kid to write. And I remember after on 9/11 in 2001, after the Twin Towers were attacked, that was a Tuesday, and I had class that day. We had both my classes, rock history and Beatles at night. And I played In My Life, and it was, I'll tell you, in that moment, it never meant as much. It was just devastating. I mean, where everyone was in tears, and it was the perfect way to sort of kick off that class in which we just played music and talked. There was no sense of having a class. But Grant, if I had more time to think about it, there's all kinds of Beatles songs that, you know, Hey Bulldog and things like that kind of go by you, and then later you go, wow, that's a great song. So I'm pretty damn old now, I guess. I'm retiring, and I'm still discovering new things I love about the Beatles and new songs that are suddenly my favorite. So that's, you know, they were our Beethovens, you know. They're as good as it gets. So you can really live with them your whole life. And obviously we do.
Speaking of career paths, I'm sure that you've encountered people who didn't think that this was a class where students would be necessarily sharpening their marketable skills. But have you had students, in fact, go on to have careers in the music industry?
Oh, yes. Several, in fact. I mean, as I say, Andy Hollenden, who's now going to be me, the rock teacher, was my grading assistant. And another grading assistant, Randy Albright, is the rock professor up at IUPUI. Jacob Smith, who was my GA for years, is now a professor at Northwestern University, where he started a whole new media school. John Jackson, who worked with me for years as a GA and an individualized major, is now a vice president at Sony in charge of Sony Legacy Records. John Strom, who took my class, is now president of Rounder Records down in Nashville.
Wow.
And many others. I mean, I'd never thought of this as a springboard to a career, but people turned it into that, or at least it helped them. And, you know, actually, what's funny is I've had a lot of students say, your class got me my job. And they're like bankers or something. I say, what do you mean? And they said, when I went to my interview, you know, looking at my resume, and they bang, the history of rock and roll and the Beatles and Bob Dylan, these courses stick out. And everyone loves the Beatles. So they'd be, what's your favorite album? What's your favorite song? Who's your favorite Beatle? And the whole interview would be about that. And then at the end, they'd say, well, you got the job. You know, if you're a Beatle fan, you got to be a good guy. And that's all we really care about. Someone we want to hang out with. So that's happened more than you would think. People that found that my courses on their resume really helped them get a job that had nothing at all to do with music. Because everyone's a music fan. You know, what doctor doesn't play guitar? You know, what lawyer doesn't, you know, love to listen to, you know, Led Zeppelin? It's funny, but it's true.
We have another listener voicemail. This one is from Carmen. Let's listen.
Hi, my name is Carmen from Goshen, Indiana. I just want to say that Mr. Gass, your class was one of my favorites when I was at IU. I learned so much, and I, you know, from someone coming from a smaller town, I didn't really, you know, I wasn't really exposed to much. I was exposed to, like, a lot of pop music, which I really liked. But yours exposed me to a lot of stuff, like early stuff, the history, and it was so interesting, and I really just really appreciated it. So thank you so much. Bye.
It's so great to hear these voicemails this hour, Don.
Yeah, that makes me so happy. Thank you, Carmen. I mean, that there is certainly, that's a really important aspect of what we do. I mean, teaching Robert Johnson, you know, teaching Hank Williams, teaching old blues and country and gospel and boogie woogie and all that. One of the great things about rock and roll is so many different types of music fed into it. And then, of course, that whole early generation of rockers is almost forgotten now, and they shouldn't be. Elvis and Jerry, we just lost Little Richard, my gosh, the greatest of them all. So, you know, I mentioned before, it's an appreciation class, and that's what I want it to be. But there's a lot of history involved, too. I mean, you cannot tell the story of 20th century America any better than through the lens of music, I think.
We're talking to Glenn Gass. He is also known as Dr. Rock. He is a professor of music at the Jacobs School of Music at IU, and he is retiring very soon. And we've been hearing from a lot of former students this hour, which has just been wonderful. And in our last half of this segment, I guess, what is the experience of teaching music for almost 40 years? What has that been like, where the music that you teach captures these specific eras in time? But every year the students come through, they're more and more distant themselves from those times. What is that part of it like, I suppose?
That's a really good question. I mean, it's a challenge, for one thing. You can really watch the eras. It's about the length of a college, like 4 or 5 years, a generation. You'll hit a sweet spot where everybody in your class was raised by Beatlemaniac parents. And they're singing along with every song I play, and they already know half of everything about them. And then, 5 years later, it's like I've had students literally say, not only have I never listened to the Beatles, I hadn't actually heard of them. And I just look at them like, what? Like, I've never heard of water. How could you not just have the Beatles in your veins? But, time goes on. So, sometimes it's a challenge to sort of get through why this music was so important and lasting and why it still matters. And other times it's a cakewalk. So it does change with each generation, and the way they react changes too. So that's why I always try to focus in on the song and the emotion of the song. And I think, that can come through no matter what. One of my regrets is I retired in a pandemic.
Yeah.
So my last classes weren't classes. They were online. And contrasting, like I mentioned 9/11 before, I mean, music was so important that day. Half the students came to class. There were 360 students in each class. Half of them had CDs with them. And they never brought CDs to class. But that day, there was just this feeling you had to have your music with you. And I let them come up and play songs that really mattered in that moment and soothed them and helped them somehow. And it was really like a cathartic experience for them and for me. And I'm really sorry that this pandemic hit during spring break and I never saw my students again in person after that. Yeah. Because I think music could have played, and does anyway, but it could have been really important and felt really important in the classroom. So that's a regret I'll always have.
We have another voicemail from a former student. This one is from Lily in Indianapolis. Let's listen.
Hi, my name is Lily Wright, calling from Indianapolis, Indiana. And this is just for Glenn. I took the Bob Dylan class last spring in 2019, which is around the year that I graduated. And just because of the way that the listening was, it kind of ended up being the soundtrack of my graduation, and I have so many fond memories just with Bob Dylan playing in the background. And I remember sitting in like the first three rows, and I just was so obsessed with this class. It was my favorite class, which is weird because I was also super shy and like never asked questions. But I guess like sitting in lectures, you don't always realize your impact or the impact that a teacher can have on you, especially I'm sure from the teacher's perspective when you're like staring at the kids and people just aren't responding. And this is now speaking from someone who is a teacher now. So you better believe that my students, even though they're fourth graders, know what Bob Dylan is. So I just want to say thank you to Glenn for the impact that you continue to have. I know that I speak for a lot of people when leaving the last class was so weird. And you just were like, well, that was cool. Now what? So just thank you for continuing to shine on. I'm going to stop rambling, but we love you, and your spirit lives on through all of us, as cheesy as that sounds. But no, we love you. So thank you, Glenn.
Oh, my.
Great message from Lily.
Lily, that is so sweet. And that's really cool, too, to hear from a teacher, someone who's now teaching and teaching their students and making sure they know who Bob Dylan is. That's wonderful. That's great to hear. And, you know, Bob Dylan just put out a new album, including a 17-minute song about the JFK assassination, which is just astonishing, called Murder Most Foul. And it can't be a coincidence that he drops that in the middle of the pandemic. You know, these two times of just national shock and crisis and urgency. You know, Bob Dylan's, like the Beatles, someone you can live with, even more so because his songs, he's still alive, for one thing, making great music. Mm-hmm. You know, I was trying to think of a good song for what's happening right now, and I thought, oh, Visions of Johanna. We all sit here stranded, though we're all doing our best to deny it. Or Desolation Row with World Just Gone Mad. I mean, he's so great. You can find the perfect Bob Dylan for any occasion. So, but that's very, really nice to hear. I appreciate that. And you're right that sometimes teachers don't know students are listening and they're not talking, but you got to remember that I hardly ever said a word in class. My God, when I was a student. So yeah, that's a nice thing to hear. Thank you.
We asked you in the beginning of the show what music meant to you in your younger years. And now, as you step away from a career of teaching that very music, I wonder how your answers changed.
This stepping away, retiring thing is starting to make me feel, maybe I'm making a terrible mistake. Every time I hear the word retirement, it just doesn't feel right. But really, you know, not that much has changed in that sense. I still turn to music for the same, you know, I have a different set of memories, associations with songs or whatever, but it still is in my life the same way it was when I was 17. It's still a place I can go and feel what I'm feeling and have it be okay, or find some song that reflects what I'm feeling in ways that I can't put into words. I mean, music is just as, and that includes classical music too, it's just as essential in my life as it ever was and always will be. And it's the nice thing about music, even if it's not a profession, you can always have it in your life and it's always a place you can go. And it seems like it's really important. I've noticed on YouTube and, you know, all these people are finding ways to make music, you know, with distance and, you know, just music just seems so, so important. Especially at times like this. So, but no, it's always going to be the center of my life, or a center of my life, until I die. I've already picked out my funeral music, and you know, I know the music I want to be listening to when I pass on. So, you know, that's, you know, I don't intend to let go of it anytime soon. But
just about 30 seconds left. What's next for you?
I guess I go into the Beat Dean's office and beg to teach again. I don't know.
Oh, no. I hope we haven't created a monster here.
No. You know, right now, this sounds very mundane and retired guy talk, but I need to sort through my life. I've got boxes in the basement labeled Boston 1977 and, you know, just my office is, you know, 40 years of stuff. And I've got a wall of cassettes and VHS tapes on it. I know I should just dump them all, but I know what I'll do. I'll take each one out and I'll look at it and go, oh, I remember, you know, and for some reason I'll bring it home and my wife will kill me. So, because all we need is a bunch of stuff. But, you know, I need to just take stock and then something will reveal itself. You know, I'm trusting that the whole way this started was such an accident that something else will come along.
Well, he's Rudy Professor and Provost Professor of Music at IU's Jacobs School of Music, Glenn Gass. It was such a pleasure to have you today, Dr. Rock. We wish you the best in retirement.
Well, thank you. It's been a real pleasure for me. It's been a fun thing to be able to do, especially at this time, right after retiring. So thank you for letting me talk about it. Great. I appreciate it.
We're on Twitter and Facebook at All In Indiana. I'm Matt Pelser. Thanks for listening. This is All In.